This episode is brought to you by Chevron, the human energy company. Energy demand is on the rise. That's why Chevron plans to increase oil production by 15% over 2021 levels in the Permian Basin, all while continuing to reduce both carbon and methane emissions intensities. Learn more at chevron.com/Permian Production.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, September 19th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. A former executive at Uber and a well-known figure in the cybersecurity space is on trial. Prosecutors accuse Joseph Sullivan of covering up a hack at the company. Sullivan and his supporters say he was just doing his job. On today's show, our cybersecurity reporter Robert McMillan joins us to discuss the case and why it has cybersecurity professionals so worried. That's after these headlines. On the subject of Uber hacks, the ride-hailing giant on Friday said a hacker gained widespread access to the company's computer systems, but not sensitive user information like ride history. The attacker, who goes by the Telegram handle Teapot, sent security researchers who work with the company screenshots that the researchers say appeared to show the hacker had gained access to a range of Uber's administrative accounts, including Amazon Web Services and Google Cloud, as well as VMware. Uber says it's responding to the attack and that it's been in touch with law enforcement. The attack comes as Uber's former head of security faces criminal charges for his handling of a previous hacking. We'll have more on that later in the show. TikTok parent ByteDance plans to spend up to $3 billion in cash to repurchase shares from investors. The buyback, laid out in a memo to investors, would value the Beijing-based company at around $300 billion. The move aims to give liquidity to some of the company's long-term shareholders, like Sequoia Capital, after ByteDance scrapped its overseas IPO plan last year. We report exclusively that the Justice Department is forming a national network of prosecutors to tackle crime linked to the use of cryptocurrencies. Officials say the Digital Asset Coordinators Network of 150 experts will help educate and train other officials on the technical and legal complications in those kinds of cases, from money laundering and financing terrorism to enabling public corruption. The same day the DOJ announced the new network, it also released a report laying out potential regulatory and legislative actions it thinks could help law enforcement fight crypto criminals. Our cybersecurity reporter Dustin Volz says the report will likely be closely examined for signs of how far law enforcement and regulators will go.
There's always going to be concerns about what potential legislation or regulations could be coming down the pipeline and how that might, in their view, stymie innovation or create more hurdles to more widespread adoption among non-criminal users of cryptocurrency. So, you know, I think we're going to continue to see the response to this play out in the weeks and months ahead.
Staying on crypto, after years of great harvest for crypto miners, they're now facing a bleak outlook. Bitcoin mining uses powerful computers to process transactions that unlock new bitcoins. Those machines were really profitable last year. But our markets reporter, Caitlin Ostroff, says that trend has completely reversed for a few reasons.
One, the price of Bitcoin itself has absolutely tumbled. It's down 50% from where it was at the end of last year. You have electricity prices rising in large part because of the war in Ukraine and also the drought in the US. And on top of that, you also have a bunch of these crypto miners who bought new machines at the end of last year when everything was high-flying and life was great. And they bought those by basically pledging machines they already owned as collateral. And when all of the Bitcoin prices fell this year, the value of those machines fell as well. And so now you have this kind of collateral mismatch that's required a lot of the miners to sell Bitcoin that they had been holding on to.
And the social networking app Parler, popular with conservatives for its stance on free speech, is restructuring. The company plans to focus on providing services to businesses that are at risk of being forced offline for carrying controversial content. Our reporter Sarah Needleman says to do that, Parler has created a new parent company, Parliament Technologies, and purchased a cloud services provider called Dynascale.
Parliament Technologies, the new parent, with this acquisition of Dynascale, is looking to provide cloud services to sort of any company, but in particular, their CEO has talked about wanting to become a business powering what he calls the uncancelable economy. He said, we're not going to cancel people for their opinions.
Parler was itself taken offline after the U.S. Capitol riot last year by the cloud service providers it relied on to operate. All right, coming up, committing a crime or just doing his job? A former Uber executive is on trial for how he handled a cyber attack. We'll discuss the case and the potential ramifications after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Chevron, the human energy company. Energy demand is on the rise. That's why Chevron plans to increase oil production by 15% over 2021 levels in the Permian Basin, all while continuing to reduce both carbon and methane emissions intensities. Learn more at chevron.com/Permian Production.
Joseph Sullivan was the chief security officer of Uber back in 2016, when the ride-hailing company experienced a massive data breach. The names, emails, and phone numbers of millions of riders were exposed, along with around 600,000 driver's license numbers. A year later, Uber disclosed the breach and said it paid the hackers $100,000. To get paid, the hackers were made to sign a non-disclosure agreement, saying they'd destroyed the data. Sullivan was fired from the company in 2017, and he's now on trial for how he handled Uber's response to the hacking. He's accused of criminal obstruction, and he's pleaded not guilty. What happens to Sullivan in this trial is being closely watched by his peers in the cybersecurity space. Joining us to discuss the trial and its implications is WSJ cybersecurity reporter Robert McMillan. Hi, Bob. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, great to be here.
Bob, companies are hit with hacks and ransomware attacks pretty often these days. So what makes prosecutors allege that in this case, a crime was committed?
Well, in this case, there was an FTC investigation going on. So companies aren't necessarily always under the scrutiny of the federal government when they get hacked. And the feds want everybody to know, to be on notice, that they're taking this stuff seriously. So the allegations here are that Mr. Sullivan basically engaged in a series of behaviors that ultimately misled the FTC about what was going on with cybersecurity at Uber. And specifically, they're saying he paid some hackers $100,000 to make a data breach go away, which is definitely a no-no. Now, Mr. Sullivan's side of the story is, look, we get security problems reported all the time. There's this thing called a bug bounty where we just pay outside researchers to report issues to us. And we felt that the data was not, you know, leaked. We had control of the data and we just sort of funneled this notification of a problem into our bug bounty program and resolved the issue with no risk to consumers.
I think the trial is interesting, even if you're not super into cybercrime or cybersecurity. But, you know, for those of us who are maybe less aware of how these systems kind of work, can you explain what a bug bounty is? Because I think that's kind of the crux of what's going on here. Did he pay a bug bounty or did he pay a ransom?
So in olden times, hackers would find problems with people's software or websites, and they would, just out of the goodness of their heart many times, try to get them fixed, or else they would maybe exploit them for fun or profit. You know, there are sort of two ways people could go with this kind of security information. And a few years ago, the tech company started realizing like, hey, we could incentivize these hackers to just quietly report these issues to us and fix them. But we need to give them some incentives. So in the olden days, it was like you get a t-shirt for reporting a bug, but hacking has become big business. And so companies are paying out hundreds of thousands of dollars now for security information. If you find a bug that's truly devastating to the, you know, Apple iPhone, you can make a lot of money with that information. So this sort of gray kind of business has evolved where people have, you know, they're sort of poking around on your website, they find a problem, and Well, they could hack in, or they could sell it to, you know, a nation state that could then hack into this company, or they could report it to the company and make some money.
How do the decisions to pay out a sum like this typically get made in a company?
Well, there's no question that in this case, it was an unusual decision. So the biggest bug bounty Uber had paid out previous to this incident was $10,000. And suddenly they're paying out $100,000, 10 times what they've paid before. So this decision, we know from court records that it went up to the CEO level. Sullivan and the CEO discussed it. The payment decision can be just sort of an automatic thing. It doesn't have to be discussed at that level. You know, you set up the program and you have the parameters of what you're going to be paying. And it doesn't have to be a CEO level call to pay, you know, $10,000 for a bug. But this case was a little unusual. And so that's actually one of the things that the prosecutors are pointing out and drawing attention to.
So who have we heard from so far in this trial, and how has that shaped either side's argument?
Through the court case, we're going to hear from Uber's security team, the incident responders, the people that were dealing with this problem. And according to Mr. Sullivan's team, there are more than 30 people who were in the loop about what was going on there. We're also going to hear from the legal team, the ones who are interfacing with the FTC and making the decisions about what to tell them. And on Friday, Uber CEO testified about the breach. Basically, he said he was hired in August of 2017. And when he took over, he kind of took a look at what was said about this incident, and he lost confidence in Joe Sullivan. He felt like he couldn't trust what Sullivan was telling him. So that's why he fired him.
Okay, the cybersecurity community is watching this case pretty closely. What are the implications they're worried about?
So the Sullivan case is really being watched very carefully by a lot of security executives, because he's facing jail time for making a decision that I think they have a lot of sympathy with this. Like, you have got a lot of pressure when you're in that position. And the calls that get made, you know, they involve a lot of people. We're talking about the CEO, the legal team, and the security team all in concert, kind of making the decisions on what to say to the FTC and how to respond to this breach. And the security guy's the one facing jail time. So there definitely is a contingent of people who work in this business who really think that Mr. Sullivan should not have been charged, right? Because he had a hard job, he had to make a call, and you know, they really have sympathy for the pressure he was under. Now, there's another group of people who say, like, look, it's obviously a data breach. When somebody gets the data and downloads it from your company, you got to disclose that. And why didn't that happen?
All right. That was WSJ cybersecurity reporter Robert McMillan. Bob, thanks always for joining us.
Great to talk to you all.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please leave us a rating and a review. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Free Expression, a new podcast from The Wall Street Journal with me, Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of The Wall Street Journal. It's a podcast in which we're going to be trying to do something a little different, dig a little deeper into the issues behind the headlines that are in the news all the time. So please join me for my new podcast, Free Expression, with Jerry Baker at The Wall Street Journal. We're very much looking forward to really having some fascinating conversations, and I very much hope you'll join us.